All right, man. Well, I was just telling you a second ago about Sam Presti's press conference, and I just felt like it was a really good point for us to kind of come up with a, I don't know, the beginning of next season. Like, I just feel like we can just kind of kick off next season right now. I feel like the players are emotionally, they're wanting to be in the playoffs, so they're starting to prepare for next season. So why don't we prepare for next season? So let's start with the, as you know, the players, like Shea, the head of the team. What does he need to do to become like more prepared?
Well, I think this goes back to something that you and I kind of talked about and hinted to yesterday, was that WWKD, you know, what would Kobe do mentality, is you've got to go out there and you've got to get your guys motivated. I think the first place and first time that you can do that is recognizing who your rookies are. You know, like recognize who needs help to get to that next spot. You know, like Josh Giddey's already had an offseason with Shea, so he knows what is expected out of him. So for me, this is just another opportunity for Shea to prove that he can take these rookies into that next section. Now, I also want to throw out there is I do believe the way that Sam Presti has drafted, man, and it's really been impressive. You know, like we talked about the analogy of there was an NFL guy that was drafting players and pretty much gets to this second round, and he sees this player and he says, that guy is going to go out and get you 10 catches, 135 yards every single game, right? But he's going to go out the night before and he's going to party and he's going to drink his ass off and he's going to go in with girls and all this other stuff. And he's still going to be able to come out there and do that on a Sunday. The problem is he's going to take six guys with him. When he takes six guys with him, those six guys immediately become useless, right? What the guy was drafting the player was saying, I'm drafting this particular player right now, is because he's going to stop those other six players from going out and drinking with this guy because he's a leader, right? And I look on this team and I say, who is Shea going to team up with to help him lead this next, you know, generation of young players? And I think it has to do with everything with J.R. Reed. J.R. Reed brings these guys in. He includes them in everything. He gets them going. And I look at the way his leadership style is and that championship mentality that he brought to the table when he came to Oklahoma City. Like, it's the key to everything. So Shea has got to get with J.R. Reed, and they've got to get a plan of the season. Now, it's been, what, a week since the season ended? So the time's over now. Now it's game time. Now you got to get into playing, getting into staying in shape, and pushing your body to that next level. And that's what Shea's going to do for these guys.
So as far as Shea goes, I think, in my opinion, there's still a lot of opportunity for improvement.
And with every player there is.
But, you know,
even with LeBron, there's opportunity.
Okay, so but with as far as like leading by example, if the players can see Shea take his game, you know, and improve it, then how can they not do the same thing when he's the best player on the team? And he has to, like, every player has to do this. They have to look inside themselves. They have to recognize their weaknesses, and they have to come up with a game plan for approaching improvement. And if I'm Shea, you know, I think his plan probably is to play for his national team. And, you know, we'll definitely make sure we cover that as that happens. But when you look at what Shea has to do, he has to improve a few things. But one of the things he can improve, and Sam Presti mentioned this in the press conference, was his defense and becoming more a complete two-way player. If you add, you know, an improved shot on the perimeter, which is something that in the playoffs, it's obvious teams are going to really challenge him to make sure he doesn't, you know, beat us by getting to the hole. That's going to be their goal. So it's going to open up the three-point shot, and if he doesn't knock it down, it's going to make other players on the team be in difficult positions. So my question for you is, going down the roster, knowing that Shea is going to be that guy, right? Tell me what Josh Giddey can do, because the easy thing last year would have been to say his three-point shot. And I think that that will improve through incremental improvement. So outside of that, what do you think, you know, is critical for him to improve?
Yeah, and I want to go back to Shea before I go to Josh. But the reason I went with the team aspect for Shea is because we need a head, you know, an alpha dog out there at all times. And Shea needs to have his imprint right now on that team. And that's my, for me, that alpha dog mentality needs to be there for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, getting to Josh Giddey, and what he needs to improve. To me, he needs to put on some muscle, right, and get more ready for those moments that we go small ball. Because when we go small ball, and whether Chet's in foul trouble, and we go straight up Josh Giddey playing that more, you know, center position, or if we're going to put Josh in that power forward position, when, again, we go more small ball. So for me, Josh has got to put some weight on. I don't necessarily think that he needs to dramatically improve much of his game already. Like, people will say his shot, but everybody knows that he's going to work on his shot this offseason. That's like shouldn't be a surprise or anything like that to anybody when you say Josh is going to be working with England, Chip England, and working on his shot. That's automatic. Right. So if we know that automatic, right. For me, it's the next step of his body transformation. He's got to be able to play that 4-through-1 position. And how do you do that in the league with a physical league that is obviously right now got to put some weight on, and you got to continue doing what he's doing by making that mismatch on offense such a horrible mismatch that they have got to go small ball to try to stop him. And when they go small ball to try to stop him, that's when it's all over, because Josh, there's nobody that can stop him with the muscles that he's going to eventually have and the speed that he has to go around other players.
So I heard Presti talking about Giddey just needing to turn some of the fouls that he has been getting into free throws and how he can do that.
So but you're saying he's basically saying that how he can address the lack of calls towards him, basically, or the finishing when he gets fouled?
Both. You know what I mean? But
okay.
I think one of the keys is to finish through contact, and then they'll give you the whistle. If you miss, they don't want to give you the whistle. They want to call and ones, not put people on the free throw line off of misses.
Oh, sure.
So,
sure.
Well, I mean, it's going to take some time. He's going to have to earn more respect in the league. But like you're saying, add muscle, but also learn how to, you know, like play through contact in a way where it's obvious when people are fouling you. So that's going to take some reacting, right? And a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, the big bodies don't get to the foul line a lot. But that's where I disagree. You look at Denver and Joker, you know?
Yeah, just draw attention to
he gets the foul. That's it. And he does that so well. And I think that's what you have to take off of that is, how do I do that? And how do I consistently get to the free throw line? Because if I can get consistently to the free throw line, I become more of an effective player like Shea.
Right. And it's just, there's a lot to really like about what we saw from Josh competitively down the stretch. He really brought his best games when it mattered the most and was able to knock down some of the biggest shots of his career in the biggest games of his career. So that's what you want to see from a gamer. But at the end, I think everybody kind of looks at it and feels like they need to prepare next year for how they can contribute more in a similar situation, because they're going to be called on things in a different way. And I look at it like the peak level of competition. I think the peak level of competitiveness, the peak level of defensive intensity, that's what every game, every off day should be preparation for, because they want to be playing in the playoffs. So they need to just say, like, what is that incredible level of competitiveness that it takes, and prepare for that. And that's going to be where it takes Shea to lead. And then J-Dub, obviously, teams kind of learned his game. They studied film, and they were able to kind of find ways to make him play in a crowd and make him feel like, you know, he was a lot of like a pivot man, catching and passing, or making a couple dribbles and passing, or just shooting from the perimeter. He's obviously got the athleticism to finish going to the hole. How does he increase his impact in the game over the offseason?
Man, bro, my brain went blank. We're talking about J-Dub,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, J-Dub finishing over, through contact.
Okay, because I almost said J-Will and talking about other stuff.
I want to talk about J-Will.
He didn't say J-Will.
We'll talk about J-Will next, but
J-Dub, man. All right, here's the thing about J-Dub is that we've already seen what he can do on defense. We've got a piece of it, right? We've got a taste of it. To me, I say the offensive side is going to come. We're going to watch a massive improvement on there. I want to see what type of defender – J-Dub can be, period. I mean, I saw him play against so many different positions and star players and all-star players and all NBA team, first team all NBA players. Like, he is a lockdown defender, but I want to see what type of defense he can play when everybody is expecting to play him a certain way, because you have an entire year on film, right? So I want to see how the offense is going to attack him next year. And if he can get better and make it so that the offense can't attack him and can't take, you know, he's closed all of his weaknesses off on defense, then we know that we have, you know, somebody that's special in that aspect. Because, again, it's about the player development. So I want to see his defense get not just better, but take such a huge step that's like, holy shit.
And what about offensively, like the way teams were – think in a way able to find some things that worked against him? How does he overcome those elements that caused him to be kind of ineffective in certain games?
They collapsed on him.
Made him play in a crowd.
They collapsed on him, and they faded on they took away all the passing lanes out of from him. That right there, that playoff style basketball that we saw in the last 12 games, that's not going to be all season. So for me, I'm looking at it. Yes, there's going to be teams that will do that. But if you have an option between shutting down J-Dub or Shai, you're going down with trying to shut down Shai, And what playoff teams did was they just stuck their best players on the court at all times against J-Dub, whether it was just second best defender. But you're talking about, like, they put oversized players on J-Dub, that were strong and fast. And that just means that a rookie like J-Dub, okay, people talk about sophomore slumps, but a rookie like J-Dub isn't going to have what I would consider a sophomore slump, right? He might have a little stutter step in the beginning, but once he gets in the flow of things, he's going to end up averaging, close to 20 points a game, if not 22 points a game.
But how does he go from, having games where he does that occasionally to averaging?
Look what
that
he did at the second half of the season. We called it the Shai second half of the season last couple of years, where he stepped up in the second half, right? And it gave us a glimpse of what he could do. J-Dub's second half is a glimpse of what he could do all season next year.
But the final, I would say, maybe five games, it looked like teams had a response for his...
Well, you know why, though? I mean, think about this, man. He played, I think, almost more games than anybody else on the team.
So
game.
You would say...
I gotta look at that.
You would say that maybe he
just ran into a wall. Look, we all ran into a wall. What's
so
that?
He did run into a wall.
We all ran into a wall. I mean, think about even us doing podcasts. Like, we all ran into a wall. Like, it got so exhausting. And I look at that and I say, I want to say that that's all that we saw right there. Because that's what I believe, that all we saw. I don't think we saw anything else except for, somebody that was so focused on playing defense on the players that he was assigned to and putting all out on the floor on defense, because recognizing I'm not going to have enough energy to do this offensive game if I put all this full defensive aspect out there. Again, why I want to see him play better defense, because if he can play better defense and not have to put as much effort into defense that he did in the last, I want to say the last seven games that he had to play, then we see a whole different side of him.
No, I do want to talk about Jay Will, and I want to talk about the rest of the guys too, but...
Hey, yeah, Matt, dog, before we go any more, Chet definitely will help Giddy finish over centers. You're absolutely right, because it's going to be one or the other. It's going to be trying to block Josh, or it's going to be making the lob impossible for Chet. So death by toothpicks.
So if we're going to say Giddy and J-Dub and Shai, if you were going to say one thing that those three guys could do and it would automatically make this team like a top five team in the league, if they each came in and they were shooting above, like, right around 40% from three. If they were each doing that, think about it. Would we automatically be a top five team?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if we're shooting 40% from three, then we'd be considered one of the better teams in the league immediately. Just because of the style of basketball we play and the cutting, the backdoor, the different I went through it today, and I was looking at the offense, right? And I'm so excited to be able to get into this offense with you guys and break it down. But the reality is that the way that we play the offense, okay, the ball goes to Shai at the right side, okay? If everybody's just looking at the court, okay, think about your Josh Giddey bringing the ball down the court, and then you're in Josh's eyes, right behind his eyes, and you go right, okay? You go right to Shai, and then you go left for screen and fade, all right? What happens with the ball the second that Shai gets the ball? The movement starts. Everywhere else goes, and they all rotate, okay? The best offense that we have on the court is when Wiggins is on the court. Why? It's because Wiggins goes backdoor every single time. We have backdoor, right? Wiggins on the baseline. And then the next play down, we'll get Wiggins following the backdoor man, okay, which is insane, guys. Like, he's a backing the backdoor man.
Right, he's watching the way defense is adjusting, and he's reacting to their adjustments.
And he's scoring because everybody else is so focused on the first on backdoor cutter. Right. And that's what I love about the offense and the way we run it. It's designed for backdoor cutters. It's designed for faders. It's designed for guys like, and yes, I understand that Trey Mann isn't there yet, but it's designed for Trey Mann because as Shea cuts to the lane, Trey Mann goes from the corner, right, all the way up to the top of the key-ish, right? And that's that, you know, right next to the bench where that corner is right there, right? And he gets right into that corner right there, that coach's box corner, and he sits there. Now, when Shea sees him, he passes him the ball, and what does Trey Mann do? He takes one dribble, sidesteps, and he's at the top of the key for a wide-open three. He just covers so much space. And that's what's so impressive about the way our offense is and the way that we run is that we utilize each and every good attribute of these players. You know, whether it's we're looking for pure shooters, we got Isaiah Joe. What do? We run an offense that allows Isaiah Joe to touch the ball at least 12 times to get a shot a game. Think about that, guys. Like, that's incredible. Like, we run an offense that allows these players, and everybody's like, oh, well, we'll never have an offense that we can have two guys that score 30-plus points a game. And I stop, and I'm like, but why? Because what we do is we get to the line, right? Shea gets to the line, and he takes out five or six shots off of his plate because he gets to the foul line, right? Mm-hmm. And on top of that, he's able to create this second tier thing where the second we get fouled in any open spot, we get to the foul line. So the way we play ball and the way we get better and these guys get better is we got to get better at this offense. We got to get on this to the point where when Shea cuts, it doesn't matter who's on the baseline. They're cutting and they're going all the way through and they're switching and they're continuing this offense that's so next level that teams can't figure out where to stop. You know, like back in the old days when they were saying, like, how do we stop, you know, this snake? It's a massive snake, and it's coming and just destroying. I think they're calling, you know, the Mongolians as they're coming through and just destroying on their horses, right? How do we stop this? And everybody was like, well, you got to cut off the head of the snake. But the problem is with the Oklahoma City Thunder offense is that it consistently moves. There is no head of the snake. You can't stop something that's impossible to figure out where the ball is going. And that's where it goes with Josh Giddey and then Shea and Dort and J-Dub. These guys are such elite passers, bro. It's amazing.
So there's the question about the type of player that we're going to be kind of targeting in the draft upcoming. I think there's going to be a lot of availability to really get the player that we want through either trading up or not. Trading back. So I like what you were saying about Wiggins. I think, you know, finding a player that's kind of like a combination of J-Dub and Wiggins that can play kind of like in space, understands the value of cutting, moving in the right places. And I haven't really dug into the
Where do those players come from?
Villanova. I don't know. Where do they come from?
Well-coached areas.
Right. I mean,
you know, you've got a handful of those. And I'll tell you, some of the highest quality of athletes being coached in college basketball right now is Arkansas. And I'm telling you guys, I'm not the only one that thinks that. If you look at the draft board, you know, these players that are coming up, the athletes that are going there, Arkansas is hot. And if you think about the way that they develop these players into the players that are being drafted the way they are, I mean, it's not a coincidence that we have Isaiah Joe and Jay Will on this team.
So you think we might get another hog?
I want another hog. I also like Rupert. I also like, there's so many guys that I like in this draft in that mid range. And even if we move back, like, there's a center from Barcelona I love, bro. It's all about where we land, you know? And to me, it's about what's the most valuable thing for Sam Presti. Like, is he looking for a replacement for Dario? Is he looking for another wing that can play multiple positions? Like, what is Sam Presti looking at? And then the other thing that we have to break down coming up in this future here is age of the players. Because there comes a point in the future here, and it could be this year, it could be next year, it could be the year after that Sam Presti is going to look at a draft or two drafts in a row that he's going to be drafting players that are going to be a little bit older than what he's been drafting. And to me, like, I don't know when that line happens, but I want to discuss a couple of those players in this draft that I really like that are older that I think that could really do some, you know, damage for our team as rookie.
Well, you know, I'm pumped up. There is a lot to take away from the, I think it was like 2.5 hours worth of Presti's stuff. But really the biggest vibe I came away from everything was just like feeling a sense of like we're exactly where we want to be. And going into this next offseason, it's going to be up to each guy to kind of demonstrate progress on their own terms. But I feel like, you know, underlying what he's not even saying, but, you know, is this fact that we've had Chris Paul, you know, show up and lead by example. We've had Horford before that show up, you know, and lead by example, I guess after that, actually. But, like, we've had other people who were, you know, proven veterans, captains of their teams, show up and kind of show how to be a captain. And Shea got that experience, right, you know, with a different group, with the Clippers. And as he's now the leader, even at a young age, that's where I think maybe the biggest improvement, maybe not something that it was like necessarily a weakness, but now more responsibility is going to be shifted on him. And it's not just about being a vocal leader, but it's about being a group leader and, you know, kind of showing everybody this is the way that we're going to attack the offseason program and come back ready to play deeper into the playoffs. And it's going to be all the way down. You know, you're going to see improvement from each of the guys. We're hoping to get, you know,
we've got wide bodies on this team now, guys, and we've got to see those wide bodies stay in shape. You know, like, that's the biggest thing that I look at for the leadership style that Shea will be is, can he get Jay Will and, you know, JRE and some of these other guys that are, you know, are bigger dudes, he's going to be able to keep their weights down? You know, like, we've seen what happens to players that can't keep their weights down in Zion. So for me, I'm looking at you know, what Shea can do to help these players. And why are we hyper-focusing on Shea's leadership style right now is because, to me, there comes a point where you become no longer known as just another player in the NBA. You become known as a superstar. And if you, first of all, you're known as a star, then you become known as a superstar. And if you want a superstar tag, you have to be an elite leader in the NBA. And that's why, to me, this is such an important season coming up here for Shea to prove to everybody he is an elite leader and he deserves to be continuously on that first all NBA team. And next year, if he comes back like Mark and I feel like he can come back and the things that he can learn, he's going to be right away known as an MVP candidate right away. Oh, and I want to say, with that being said, candidate, I want to say a huge fuck yes to Coach Mark, man. He came second in the NBA coaching ballots. In fact, he led all of the league with second place votes, meaning that they all felt like he did the second best job this year. Unbelievable job by Coach D. Hats off to him.
Who won it? Do you know?
Kings. Whatever his name is. I can't remember his name.
Yeah. Mike. I forget. Mike.
Yeah. Coach Mike.
Coach Mike.
There you go.
No, but that's definitely cool. He,
it's amazing, man.
I think he endured.
He had 164 points. Coach Mike had 500, which is, you know, he got 5 points for every first place votes. And there was 100. So he got every single first place vote. And Coach D got, I think, like 38 of the second place votes or something like that. So again, phenomenal job by Coach D.
There are some really good candidates too. And like, this wasn't a year where there wasn't good opportunities. Like, you could see Will Hardy making a serious case for it with the job he did, in Dave's heart and everybody's heart up in Utah.
Man, I want to real El Sombro. Listen, man, we cannot trade our assets. We just can't. We're a small market team. I can't imagine trading 4 first rounds for a player that's going to exceed our spending limit. And yes, we have the cap space. But, I mean, I just can't. I can't send 4 first-round picks.
No 4 first-rounders for Siakam, no.
If they want to give him away for a first-round pick, then I would take it. But that's not what's going to happen with this. I mean, he's going to go to a team that is going to offer 4 first-round picks, and we're just not going to do that because we can't lose our assets for the future for this team.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a big part of us. having future flexibility when it comes That's time it. To do all sorts of things. But one of the
to sign these players that we have, and if we put out another player like Siakam, and then all of a sudden it takes away from what we can sign, and that's probably J-Dub, or that's Josh Giddey. And this, I just don't know if I'm willing to put our future up for Siakam.
This is something that a lot of people have discussed when talking about the new CBA.
Awesome, so yeah.
With and I heard Presti kind of discuss it, although he wouldn't really talk about the new CBA or anything. But like with this team, as it goes into long-term contention, and you get to the point where you're in the cap, you have to be able to add new talent. And the one of the best mechanisms in the past, but it's going to become of increased importance in the future probably, is the draft. So we have to be able to infuse new talent into this team for affordable prices. And the only way to do that in the future with the new CBA, it seems like, is going to be through the draft. So we have to be...
Draft is the most valuable assets in the NBA for the next 7 years,
guys.
And it's
going to be more important. And because of that, we don't even know how important yet. We have to at least see what's going to happen before we go out and trade.
That's right.
So...
Yeah, and I'm talking about, like, this next year, Sombra, like, and Brian Taylor, you're right on right now. Like, this next year is going to see what this team can bring. Who can bring it? Who can understand what we're trying to get out of a big man? And then at that point... If we can't get it done and we can't address it through the draft, then I think Sam Presti looks at stuff. But we're still a year away from, you know, trying to pull a Clint Capella or, you know, a different player like that. Because, again, it has to be the right mindset.
But here's the thing. When you say Capella and when you say Siakam, I mean,
yeah,
those two guys aren't going to be the guys. But that's the right mentality. Like, it's going to be some guy that has massive upside that we draft. And then we're going to look back and be like, yeah, this guy has Siakam or Capella type elements. Like, I expect to have somebody who we get at least as excited about as J-Dub about. And I know maybe that's ridiculous because of where we're picking, but there's always talented players in the draft.
There's always talented big players that are in the mid-range because no one really knows where they fall right now.
So there's an opportunity here, and we can come back even better with – just adding Chet. But then you add another player that could potentially be...
But we're not just adding Chet. We're adding Chet, Kenny, Poku.
Right. And
I mean, that's a pretty big add-on without even getting into anything else. That's not adding a draft pick. That's not adding anything else that's going to happen this offseason.
And I feel like Jang will provide valuable minutes throughout the year.
Oh, Jang, bro. I know we didn't talk about Jang, but the reality is the reason... He got injured, and then he came back, and then he was in the G League. But Jang was designed, I believe, in the beginning to play G League primarily, right? Mm-hmm. And then he got injured, and that pretty much solidified that. But the reality is that Jang is a special player. Like, and anybody that's watched this game, whether it's G League or the NBA, recognized early on, especially before the G League started, and he was getting some burn time there, how good he really was. You know, he didn't need to go to the G League. Yes, it was good for his development, but if he never got injured, I think he had more playing time in the NBA than in the G League because he's that good of a player. He's a lockdown defender. He's 6'10 with a 7'1" wingspan. Like, this dude is legit, and his release is high. Mm-hmm. It's smooth. Like, people are going to have a hard time stopping him when he gets on a roll. So, again, this is all about being patient and letting our players develop instead of trying to rush the development.
So... It's going to be a big offseason for every guy going down the list. Jay Will is one of those guys that...
Right on, Ricky.
We expect to have an intense level of improvement from. But a lot of that comes from just him maybe kind of understanding what it takes to play in the NBA and having some time to process that, develop a workout plan, and come back a better player. He's got a lot he can prove, and he's already proven quite a bit. So... The depth of this team, the improvement coming from hitting the weights and getting into playoff conditioning and staying in playoff conditioning all season.
That's it.
Like, this is, we're going to come back, I think, a bigger, stronger, more physical team and playing with intense purpose from the first tip off for 82 games. I expect that, every month of the season, we're going to be above 500. This last year, we had only 2 months where we're above 500. I really anticipate us having every month above 500, and we'll have some months where we might win 10 games. And if we do things like that, then we'll have a chance to be in the top, you know, 10 teams in the league. That's my expectations, but I'm...
Bro, listen, I consider this team in almost every major statistic was a top 10 team already this year.
For most of the season.
And that's how they will be ranked going into next season, is I think they'll be ranked at 10. And I think this is something that we have to look at for next year, is the development that's going to happen. I mean, we can talk about everybody else that we want, but the reality is this team, right, mm-hmm. and the way they develop and being patient with each of these players is the key to the success long term for the Thunder.
There you go. So that's going to wrap it up, bro. We're going to jump back.
Man, I just want to say it's been good to see you, man.
Yeah, man.
I missed you the last like 5-6 days. Dude, it's good to see you guys too, man. Missed all y'all.
Yeah, it was really good time to reset, get out. I realized how much I've been ignoring my family during this little playoff run. So we'll get back at it and we'll stay at it. And there's a lot to cover in this offseason. It's been fun to keep an eye on what's going on with the NBA, but I still haven't brought myself to watch another game. But
so much shit's been happening too.
So many nut busting, elbows and everything, dude. It's
dude, everybody's just taking their dicks and stapling on their foreheads and running around, dude. It's insane right now.
It's just round one, baby. It's gonna go to another level coming up. All right, man, we'll see you what, Monday 9:30, if it works.
Yeah, dude, Monday. Oh, what is today, Thursday? Friday. Monday 9:30, guys, 9:30 Eastern time, we go live.
We'll see you guys then.